Welcome to the Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day call. My name is Jenny, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Brenna Buehler. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this month's Auto Trader and Kelley Blue Book Sales Day conference call. We have both Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelley Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, Executive Analyst for Auto Trader, speaking today on October 2017 results, followed by a Q&A. And first, I'll hand it off to Alec.
Thanks, Brenna, and thanks, everybody, for joining. As you've all seen as the results have come in so far this month, we have enjoyed another strong month of industry sales. Now, the overall pace has certainly declined from the 18.5 million SAR pace we saw in September, which was largely driven by replacement demand due to the hurricanes that affected parts of Texas, Louisiana, and Florida. However, given that, sales still came in right on pace with our forecast, which called for 17.9 million SAR overall, or volume in the neighborhood of 1,340,000 units. In fact, numbers are coming in slightly above expectations. We could see overall sales press up perhaps by as much as $10,000 over our forecast, putting us at 1,350,000 units overall and maybe as high as 18 million SAR for the month. So again, takeaway there is a very, very strong month, but certainly confirms the fact that September saw a robust gain driven by hurricane recovery efforts. In terms of our overall expectations for the rest of the year, we have narrowed our overall range, and we now sit at about 16.9 to 17.2 million sales overall. What remains to be seen is if the momentum we're seeing right now can maintain through the rest of the year, as in the early parts of October, there was still some trailing demand related to folks looking to replace their vehicles impacted by the natural disasters. However, in the second half of the month, it looked as though most of that demand had been satisfied, and we are back to more of a normal trend. So I think as we head into November now, expect to see SAR kind of dip back into the mid to high 17s that we've seen throughout the rest of the year prior to the impact of the hurricane. Looking at the market from a macro perspective, looking at the economy, overall conditions remain very, very strong and conducive to a continued strong auto environment. Consumer confidence continues to rise and remains at a very, very solid level. Unemployment continued to come down, and we're now at the low 4% range. And in terms of gas prices, we're still looking at $2.40 per gallon on average across the U.S., certainly higher in some parts of the country as it is here in California, where it's north of $3 per gallon, but from a historical perspective, still very, very affordable overall. Looking at segments, no surprises there. Full-size trucks continue to outperform the overall market. In fact, GM saw sales of more than 80,000 full-size pickups across Silverado, Sierra, and I believe that included Colorado and Canyon, so some of their mid-size trucks. But the key segment that we continue to watch grow are small compact utilities like RAV4, CRV, Ford's Escape, which now maintain control of 18% of the market. And in fact, while the overall sales for this year are expected to stabilize and come in slightly below what we saw last year, this is a segment that has grown about 10% on a year-over-year basis. So continued gains there. And if one segment is going to outperform and do well, of course, another has to decline. No surprise there when we look at mid-sized cars, which we expect to see October mark the 20th consecutive month of declines and contributing to a loss in market share, which has persisted over the last 5 years. A particular note there, the new Honda Accord and Toyota Camry are starting to arrive at dealerships. So look for perhaps a bit of a rebound for those nameplates in particular. However, given the overall competitive pressure in the overall segment and industry, don't expect a rebound for the midsize car segment as a whole, as again, consumer preference continues to remain squarely focused on CUVs and trucks. Finally, before I turn it back over to Michelle, looking at some of the financial metrics for the month, overall ETPs came in at just above $35,000 on average across the industry. That is up about 0.3% year over year. What we can say is that while ATPs do continue to rise more broadly across the industry, that trend is certainly starting to stabilize. We are starting to see that growth flatten out. So we're at a point where we aren't seeing the same sort of 1 and 2% year over year growth in terms of transaction prices that has become the norm over the past 3, 4, 5 years. Perhaps driving some of that pressure on transaction prices is the fact that days in inventory remains above 80 overall, so still ample inventory across the U.S. despite the strong month we saw in September and certainly a solid performance in October, which has also helped to contribute to rising incentive spend, which we anticipate to come in around $3,900 per month, perhaps as high as $4,000 overall. We're still bringing in the final numbers to tabulate that final number. Now, take those two together, compare incentives as a percent of ATP. And in fact, we are now over 11%, which, again, we view this as a good barometer in terms of how disciplined the OEMs are performing in terms of their spend relative to ATPs. And as noted, transaction prices, at least the growth there, has stabilized. The numbers overall remain very, very high. Incentives are growing at a much faster pace at this point, so it'll be interesting to see how manufacturers continue to manage their production, their spend, sales into rental, for example, as they look to balance incentives with respect to transaction prices. And with that, I will turn it over to Michelle for her analysis and insight.
Thank you, Alex. I would just like to reiterate a few things. At the very beginning of the year, we called this the post-peak era. We knew we wouldn't set another record. And you could see the signs of that, and we're continuing to see some of the signs of that, the slowing to flat average transaction prices. We've seen incentives grow. We've seen at times inventories grow, although I would note we are seeing some discipline by some automakers to keep those in check by cutting production. But at the same time, I think it shouldn't be lost on us that this is a pretty strong market. And if we do hit that 17 million number this year, that'll only be the fifth time that's ever happened. So I think we should not lose sight of that. And in fact, the economic indicators are strong. Unemployment, Alex mentioned some of these. And in the consumer confidence area, 17-year highs. And if you looked at the University of Michigan consumer sentiment data, it showed a pretty strong interest by consumers of buying a car in the coming months. So I think those things bode well. There are some things we are watching. Alec mentioned a few, but we also are looking at, there's a lot of lease pull-ahead programs right now, and we're watching those to see when's the payback and hangover of that going to come. And then we're also looking at a lot off-lease vehicles that are coming back and the competition they create for new car sales. In terms of automakers, it's kind of the same story. Trucks and sport utility vehicles are winning the day. If you look at General Motors, their strength, it's a good thing this is their new sport utility vehicle year. They had tremendous sales in the sport utility areas. Cars, not so much. The Chevy Bolt, while tiny, kind of interesting. It sells with no incentives. It was one of only three cars that had any kind of increase. Ford, it's the same story there with the Ford F-Series. They kind of did better than we thought. It looks like there was a fleet sale in there with Focus sales up. Fiat Chrysler, we expected them to be down as they were, but I'm seeing some positive signs. Jeep has struggled through the year. It looks like they're righting that ship now that they've changed their product line around. Sales of the Jeep Compass were way up, and fortunately this month it didn't appear to be at the expense of the Jeep Cherokee. It looked for a while that people were going to the Compass instead of the more expensive Cherokee. And then the upcoming launch of the new Wrangler, which is just around the corner, it will be the icing on the cake for them. Nissan, we've got to all sharpen our pencils on this one. They keep outpacing forecasts, and a lot of that seems to be due to some fleet sales. And they are very aggressive in the marketplace, no doubt. Honda, it's the car company. It's amazing how well Honda does with cars, and I would expect from all the reviews I'm hearing on the new Accord that that will do extremely well. The Civic had a phenomenal month this month. And likewise at Toyota, Camry looks to be positive, and of course the RAV4 had another tremendous month. With that, let's open it up to questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. There will be a delay before the first question is announced. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And we have a question from Nathan Bowen from USA Today.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Nathan.
So for a long time now, we've been talking about incentives on small cars and mid-sized cars, et cetera, obviously because of the declining interest there. But are you starting to see it creep into crossovers and SUVs at all? I mean, you know, Alec kind of mentioned the flattening of transaction prices and the increase of incentives. And so I'm just wondering if we're starting to see a little bit more competitive stuff going on with SUVs and crossovers.
Yeah, look, why don't you start, and then I'll address a specific category.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think at a broad level, most definitely we are starting to see increased incentive spend, even in the competitive small CUV segments. What I would expect to find, again, with some exceptions, is that the majority of incentive applied towards CUVs is going to be in the form of lease support and finance support as opposed to pure cash. I mean, you can go out there, you'll be able to find $1,000 off or $1,500 off here and there. But if you're looking at some of the higher volume, you know, truly popular CUVs like CR-V and RAV4, unless you're looking at, you know, something like a hybrid variant or one of their slower selling trim configurations, I wouldn't expect to find a ton of cash support. But lease incentives are most certainly out there, and we do remain, if you believe, the lease penetration rate is still hovering around 30%. So obviously there is a push towards lease in these segments, but that's what we're seeing at the moment anyway.
So, Nathan, I would also add one of the things we looked at this month, AIS Rebates, our company in Ann Arbor that tracks incentives, noted a lot of luxury incentives, and many of those were in the form that Alec talked about in terms of lease credits and lease pull-ahead programs, but we're also seeing a lot of dealer cash on several models. Jaguar's got some very big ones, $20,000 and $30,000. Land Rover is doing a pull-ahead program. Volvo has some pretty hefty, I think we calculated it's up to over $27,000 you can get on one of its sport utility vehicles. So luxury, definitely. And these are things we usually see in December, so it's going to be interesting to see what really happens in December. Will they amp these up?
Well, and on luxury, that's really interesting. I mean, do you think that is all is that because the gap between mainstream models and luxury models has narrowed?
There may be some of that. You know, I've also, and we got to dig into this, but, you know, there also may be a demographic thing. Remember who the baby boomers are the biggest buyers of these luxury vehicles, and we know millennials are have been slow to get into the new car market, slow to you know, they're behind on everything in terms of gaining wealth and such. So it may be some of that, just highly competitive in the market. I don't know. We need to dig much deeper into that.
Okay, cool. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Nathan, just one more point for you on incentive spend for CUVs versus, you know, midsize cars, for example. We pulled some numbers really quick, and remember that overall industry benchmark of incentive spend as a percent of ATP. For the industry, we put that at 11%, which is really the highest we've seen since at least 2005. Looking at it segment-specific, compact CUVs are hovering around 9%, so well below industry average. However, that number, while stable over the past year or so, has been rising a bit as of late. Mid-sized cars, however, are close to 16%, by far the highest in the industry. So just a little bit of perspective in terms of what the incentive spend looks like relative to transaction prices realized by the manufacturers. And clearly, they're having to spend quite a bit more to move mid-sized cars compared to CUVs.
Cool. That's great. Thanks, Chris.
Yep. Got it.
And our next question comes from Megan Lampinen from Automotive World.
Hi, Megan. Hi, guys. I was looking for a little bit more insight about the segment shifts that we've been seeing over the past few years from passenger cars to utilities and pickups. Have you got an estimate on where you think this balance will end up, sort of where the segment market shares will end up being happy and stable?
Have at it, Alec. I talked to Megan yesterday on this.
So I'm pulling up the actual share numbers now. So where we sit today, compact SUVs make up, as I mentioned, about 18% of the market overall. That's up about a point year over year. And, in fact, that puts overall cars at about 37% of the market. Here's the slide I was looking for. So if I look at so I'm going to go a little bit broader. Again, compact SUVs is the biggest single segment in the overall industry at 18%, but if you add in mid-size SUVs, full-size SUVs, to get the complete picture, you're looking at about 35% of the overall industry. And then if I look at non-luxury cars, you're looking at about 30%. If I were to rewind the clock and go back to 2007, you had SUVs maintaining about 23% market share versus cars, which sit at about 40. So the question becomes, do you see a wholesale shift? You know, do you see non-luxury cars drop all the way down to 20%? Do you see SUVs bounce all the way up to 40? I don't know that you're going to see a 100% flip from where we're at today back to where we were at in 2007. However, I would say that there is room for SUVs to continue to gain share, as we've seen so far this year, at least looking at the midsize segment. Midsize cars continue to decline more than any other segment. Compact SUVs still rising faster than any other segment. So it wouldn't surprise me to see that overall share of non-luxury SUVs increase from the current 34-35% to 36-37%, maybe even approaching 40% in the next year or two. Difficult to say. And cars, I don't know if I see non-luxury cars bottoming out to 20% of market, but from where we're at today at 30%, you could see them drop another 3, 4, 5 basis points. So it's really hard to peg and say exactly where things are going to stabilize and settle, but I do think there is room for this trend to continue.
Okay, got it. And just another quick question specifically on Lincoln. Its chief, Kumar Galhotra, has just got a new position added. I think it's global marketing responsibilities. Is there any concern about him, you know, redirecting attention away from Lincoln with this, or is this more, he's done such a good job at Lincoln, that's why he's getting this additional responsibility? Any thoughts on what that might mean for the brand?
I see this as a attaboy. You know, he's done a good job of establishing Lincoln. I mean, not to say they don't have a long way to go, but no, I don't see that as, you know, any problem. And they've got, you know, they've got a bench there that they can tap into, executive.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Phoebe Will Howard, Detroit Free Press.
Hey, guys. Two very short questions. One, what is your take on Fiat Chrysler? So, you know, they're reporting the numbers are all strategic on their part, and they're notable. And my question for you is, what's your take on those numbers? Is everything as strategic as they say?
Well, I would say, hi, Phoebe.
Hi.
I would say that, you know, certainly we think it's a positive that they're reducing their reliance on daily rental sales. I think this month they said down 43%. They're, you know, they're behind in terms of GM and Ford did that already. And we think that goes a long way to helping them with their resale values. You know, the Jeep they kept assuring would start to turn around. It's down 3%, but it had been down double digits, and, you know, they haven't got the Wrangler out there yet, new Wrangler out there yet. So that seems to be a positive.
Okay. Thank you. And then
Alex, maybe you have something to add?
I mean, the only thing that I would potentially add is that, yeah, I think the things that they're doing right now are certainly strategic to try and rebuild and reposition the brand for financial success in the future. But I think a lot of the strategies they're employing today are also driven by necessity based on the fact that they've had, you know, a number of vehicles that have missed the mark over the years that they are retiring, phasing out, or refreshing. You know, you can look at, you know, certainly the Chrysler 200, Dodge Dart, Dodge Avenger, which, you know, for some time now have been shut down and waning in terms of final remaining units being sold. But so I think, you know, FCA has seen that they've had major nameplates in major segments that weren't able to compete and certainly have had to revisit their strategy going forward to ensure their position for success. So, yes, it's strategic. Cutting down the rental is the right thing to do. To maintain long-term resale value and health for the brand, but again, I think a lot of it's driven by necessity as well.
Necessity, and then they, you know, it was fortuitous that the market has swung so much towards sport utility vehicles. They were so weak in cars that they got the models that they got out of that Alec mentioned, and so to build their continue to build on their strength with sport utility vehicles. It looked like a brilliant strategy, but it was out of necessity, and it was fortuitous that the market shifted that way.
Okay, and then
I don't know that they anticipated it to shift that far. I don't know that we could say that we anticipated such a huge and dramatic and quick shift. But
is that what you call it, a huge and dramatic quick shift?
Yeah, well, it was dramatic. I mean, we've seen it coming since probably 2003-ish, but it just has accelerated the shift from cars to sport utility vehicles. Some of that has to do with much better product, but I don't think we anticipated how dramatic the shift would be.
And then the last question is just landscape. The analysts, Ford, everyone's talking about low unemployment, high consumer confidence, all the things you mentioned as well, low gas prices, et cetera. So if, in fact, the landscape is so positive, why isn't there more overall growth in the industry? Because, I mean, it should benefit everybody. It shouldn't benefit one or two overall. What do you think? Or is it just not taking effect yet?
First, let's remember we've had how many years of unprecedented year-over-year growth. But yeah, the other thing that, you know, the used car market's very strong. And, one of the things that we're seeing is, we had record levels of leasing. Those vehicles are coming back and there's some, what we call nearly new vehicles are competing for some of the, new car sales. So that's a factor. That is a question, you know, we ponder as well that if things are so strong, should we not see stronger car sales? We also know there's an affordability issue. We've been talking about that for the last couple of years. You know, wages have not kept pace at all with the price of cars, with the price of everything else. Alec mentioned the average transaction price is in around $35,000 right now. So wages just haven't kept up with that. But, you know, used and nearly new offer an alternative to people with those affordability issues.
Yeah, and I think that's a key point, Michelle, is one, you know, affordability is a challenge for folks to get out and buy new. So the potential for new car sales to jump and hit, you know, to 18, 19, 20 million units is always going to be a challenge when you have new cars that are so expensive for most, especially given the level of median income in the U.S. and many parts of the country. And I think, too, you have to look at the quality and durability of cars that have been built over the last several years. You know, at this point, you've got 255 million cars on the road today. I think you've got something like 1.1 cars registered for every licensed driver 16 years of age or over. So I think from a supply perspective, there's plenty of cars to go around. You also have, you know, we're saying 17 million new cars sold this year. We'll see 40, 41, 42 million used cars sold. So there is still a tremendous amount of sales activity, a tremendous number of cars exchanging hands. But despite the continued growth and strength and rebound in the economy, there are just, like Michelle pointed out, there are so many options out there. And one of those options for a lot of people is really just to keep the car that you have because it will run until it has 150 or 200,000 miles. And I think in some cases, especially on the lower end spectrum of the income scale, that's the decision that some folks are making, that or buying used or buying certified pre-owned, which, again, is going to be a stronger and stronger and greater share of the overall market in the years to come because of all of the lease activity over the last several years. It's going to be tough to turn away from some of those deals that we're going to be seeing in the next 12, 18, 24 months. So it's going to be a challenge for dealers and for manufacturers to push new car when you're going to have so many great used cars and certified pre-owned cars sitting on the same lot right next to that new car inventory at a substantial discount. That's going to make it very, very challenging to continue to see new car growth.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Ross Mitchell from Los Angeles Times.
Hi, Ross.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good.
Could you talk, I know it's a tiny piece of the market, but could you talk a little bit more about the Bolt and whether you're seeing that as primarily a compliance car or the tip of the spear of a new trend?
I don't know that I'd call it, you know, I keep getting these questions from media, oh, is it at a tipping point? Well, publicity around electric vehicles is at a tipping point, it seems like, but in reality, right, what we're seeing are, you know, the biggest discounts are on electric vehicles. I think I looked at the KBB average transaction price. It had the biggest drop. We're just not there yet in terms of the consumer of it being a tipping point. I think the thing with the Chevy Bolt, it's minuscule. We're talking 3,000 sales a month.
Right.
But I think it's got the right range capability right now and in the right price range right now. But to say we're at a tipping point in terms of the consumer acceptance of electric vehicles, we're not there.
From what I understand, and they've never been public about this, but 3,000 a month is more than they were expecting.
I don't know what they were expecting, so and they're selling it globally too. So I know they're
yeah,
allocating the production. Alec, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, and I think you hit it, Michelle. I mean, ultimately, even from GM's perspective, as you said, and I think that does sound right, that the sales they're seeing right now are exceeding expectations to a degree, but that says that GM went out there with fairly modest expectations for the car. You know, we've always been talking about what this perfect electric car is going to look like, that's going to go out there and change consumer perception and finally drive market share beyond, you know, 1 or 2% of sales overall every year. And the Bolt seems to check all the boxes, you know, $35,000, 200-plus mile range.
Except it's a car, not a crossover.
Features. I'm sorry?
Except it's a car and not a crossover.
Oh, I know, right? That would be perfect to just bring it all together. But it's, at the same time, whether it's lack of exposure to the product, because, you know, driving the Bolt or any electric for that matter is just a fantastic driving experience, so quiet, refined, instantaneous torque to get off the line. It's a very enjoyable experience, or whether it's some degree of range anxiety out there, or the fact that it's, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, it's a $35,000 compact hatchback at the end of the day. And the Honda Fit is also a very capable compact hatchback, which can be had for $20,000. So affordability, I think, is still an issue, even though the Bolt has gone a long way to close that gap and be a mainstream alternative to a traditional car. So it's still just a tough nut to crack, I think, for manufacturers to get mainstream acceptance.
And gas prices are still low.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And gasoline engines have gotten so much better, so there's more competition in that regard.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Thank you. Keep an eye out for next month's call-in details, and our analysts will be at the LA Auto Show later this month, so please let us know if you need anything for the show or for any other stories you're working on, and we will be happy to help. Thank you all for joining, and have a great day.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.